a lot of Christmas movies with a lot of different inspirations. The new film Last Christmas is inspired by a song. That's Last Christmas, of course, released in 1984 by Wham, the duo that featured George Michael. The film it inspired is directed by Paul Feig and written by Bryony Kimmings and Emma Thompson.
Starring Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones and Henry Golding from Crazy Rich Asians, Last Christmas tells the story of a woman who's struggling to get back on her feet after an illness knocked her out.
The film co-stars Michelle Yeoh with appearances from Rob Delaney, Peter Serafinowicz, and even Patti LuPone. It also features lots and lots of the music of George Michael. I'm Linda Holmes.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. We're talking about Last Christmas today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Welcome back. You just met Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And returning to our fourth chair today is Margaret Willison, the co-host of the Appointment TV podcast and one half of Two Bossy Dames. Welcome back, Margaret.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
It is wonderful to have you with us, as always. All that I think you need to know about this is that, as I said, Emilia Clarke is playing a woman who is, you know, very much down on her luck. She has a job working in a year-round Christmas store run by the character played by Michelle Yeoh. She's kind of a mess and drinking a lot and having unsatisfying, unhappy sex with a lot of people. Stephen Thompson, what did you think of this Christmas confection?
Well, much has already been said and written about this movie's kind of tonal issues. The fact that it has been marketed as a rom-com, even though it's not necessarily terribly romantic nor terribly funny. And there's a little bit of an issue with the expectations that some of the marketing has set for this movie. Watching it about halfway through, I found myself kind of folding my arms and thinking, every single one of this woman's problems would be solved if she weren't such a selfish jerk. But then there's a little bit of a shift that happens in the movie where you start to get a sense that the movie understands that fact and sets about solving it. I mean, I don't necessarily think this movie should have been called something like A Christmas Lesson, but it is very much more of a Christmas lesson kind of movie than a romantic comedy kind of movie. And I found myself kind of turning around on it a little bit as it went along, and it kind of gets me on its side over time, at which point I kind of found it basically satisfying. I do think this is much more the kind of movie to enjoy on Netflix at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when you're snowed in than something where I would like make an appointment and go out to see it in a theater. I don't think it is a major film by any means, but I ultimately found myself basically enjoying it after some early frustrations.
All right, fair enough. Margaret Willison, what'd you think?
I had mixed feelings about this movie. I enjoyed the process of watching it. If you are someone who likes light Christmas entertainments with just a scotch of emotional manipulation, this one's for you because it's a better than average version of that. If you are someone who will enjoy that, but even more enjoy going out with four of your friends afterwards to drink and give imaginary script notes on how the movie could have been dramatically improved, I can't imagine a better Sunday afternoon for you than seeing this movie with three similarly inclined friends.
All right, Glenn Weldon, what did you think?
Uh-huh. Okay. I'd love to be an enigma. I love to have layers. Today is not that day. This was so boring. Oh, my God. This was so boring. And look, it's a Paul Feig film, as you mentioned, and he is not a visual stylist. He's not an auteur. You can't look at a screenshot and say, oh, this is Feig. Look at that Feig going on there. What he is, however, is a comedy guy. He knows comedic timing. The last film he directed was A Simple Favor, which I loved for so many reasons. But going back to watch it, a large part of why I loved it as much was down to the direction. There was such an assured, consistent tone, a sense of purpose and drive and momentum. That film was sharp in every sense of the word, including the wardrobe. This film is dull in every sense of the word. It is flat and listless and sluggish. Scenes keep going on after they have surrendered their meaning, long after they have surrendered to us whatever they're going to tell us. You do that to kind of establish maybe a sense of place or cultivate a mood, but I just couldn't figure out why these scenes were going on and on and on. So you're right. As you mentioned, Stephen, it's not romantic. It's not particularly comedic. So that leaves you with a hyphen. That's what this film is to me. Just the hyphen.
Fair enough. I really enjoyed it, but I only enjoyed it after I probably was about a third of the way into the film when I thought to myself, oh, okay, The Lineage is not romantic comedy. The Lineage is A Christmas Carol. The Lineage is Scrooge. Mm-hmm. And if you see it as a kind of a lighthearted Scrooge riff in which the Emilia Clarke character is the kind of messed up person who is not very nice. It's a different version of not very nice than Scrooge, right? She's a little bit more of a kind of, I want everyone to think I'm adorable while I go around and actually act like kind of a jerk. But if you think of the entire film through that Scrooge lens, then I think the ways in which, if you think of it as a romantic comedy, because of the way it unfolds, it has no stakes, right? If you think of it as a romance or a romantic comedy, it is not one. It is a Scrooge movie. So the entire purpose of the movie is her learning to be a better person. You're right that it's a Paul Feig film from a direction perspective, but it's also co-written by Emma Thompson. And I think you get a lot, and Emma Thompson is also in it playing the character's mother. A very unusual Emma Thompson turn, but I thought funny in many places. But I did think ultimately that it was very sweet and touching. I liked where they went with it. I think it's a satisfying, upbeat Christmas movie. I can't deny that I think it has a significant problem. And it's not often that I sit and I watch a movie and I say, here's how I would have made this movie better, yeah. Right? Because I don't think that's always the right thing for critics to do. And here I also call on experience having written a novel, right? Yes. This film has a big kind of info drop very late in the movie. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, you could have put that in the front. You can do that in the first act. You don't need it. You don't need that surprise.
Yeah.
You don't need to be holding out on that because it lives in that uncomfortable situation where if you don't figure out exactly what's going on long before they tell you, you certainly figure out that something's going right. on. And so you wind up in that weird, you're ahead of the movie, but you're also frustrated. I would have dropped that at the beginning. I would have dropped that as soon as those characters meet. Then you got a movie.
Right.
Then I think you've got a movie. So I can't ignore the fact that I think that's a big flaw in how it's constructed. But ultimately, I liked Emilia Clarke doing this. I thought she was really cute. Henry Golding doesn't have a lot to do except to be very, very beautiful. But I enjoyed it. I really did. I kind of got into the sort of it's one of the many Christmas movies that ends with like a Christmas musical number. And it's one of those. And I enjoyed it a lot as that.
I agree with you completely. And I think that solves a lot of the issues I had watching the film where like once it reveals what it is, I'm kind of on its side again instead of being dragged along thinking I'm supposed to find her charming. Mm-hmm. And I think if you understand that she's not supposed to be
she's Scrooge,
that does cast the movie in a little bit of a different light. I mean, Linda, you as a connoisseur of Hallmark movies,
yeah.
I wonder what you thought when much of the film is set in a year-round Christmas store where the proprietress is named Santa.
Yeah.
And how much that felt like it had Hallmark movie DNA in it. It had a little bit of this like twinkly, like if Richard Curtis made a Hallmark movie vibe to it early. Like how did it compare for you with a lot of these Hallmark movies that are set in like year-round Christmas stores or like reindeer farms or whatever?
A Hallmark movie would never have as much darkness in it as this movie has in it. It would never have somebody who's hurt other people in some of the ways that she has and does. It would never have a central character who is this selfish.
Yeah.
I think just because of the world that Emma Thompson and Paul Feig are feeling steeped in. It has a kind of an immigration side story where her family is immigrated to England from the former Yugoslavia when she was a small child. I think it has an underlying darkness that those films don't have. I do think what happened is that the marketing decided to play up the sense that it was very similar to these Hallmark Lifetime romantic comedy type of movies. It is not a romantic comedy. It drives me crazy when people who have seen this movie call it a romantic comedy because it is not one, other than in the marketing.
Right.
They marketed it as one, but if you go knowing that it isn't one, that it's a Christmas Carol movie, then I think it's good.
Well, sort of. Removing the element of surprise and establishing the situation at the beginning would make a huge difference. I think the other thing that would make a huge difference is Henry Golding's character, Tom Webster, meeting truly one person who knew him other than Amelia Clark. He's a real human. We see his apartment. We see a place he's volunteered. But we don't meet any friend, any family member. We have no sense of where he fits in a community, and we really have no sense of what he exists to do other than, like, sort of kiss Amelia Clark sometimes, shame her about her mobile phone usage, and shame her about how often she chooses to have sex.
I did not hear him shame her about having sex, I have to say.
Well, there's a tension about how much romantic contact they have for the majority of the movie. And I think if you're a woman who's been in a situation where there's tension about how much romantic connection you want to have with somebody and they don't, that a certain amount of shame rebounds on you. I don't know that the movie is deliberately framing it that way, but it's not doing a good job of navigating the fact that, like, this is a woman having a lot of sex and she's unhappy about it. And the reason it's a problem in the movie is that she's unhappy about it and it's an expression of her unhappiness. But that's not far enough from the social stigma of being a woman who's having a lot of sex. I think Amelia Clark is incredibly appealing. I think Paul Feig's direction of female actors continues to be just on an exceptional level. But that relationship was really lacking for me.
Yeah, I agree, Margaret. I mean, I think where this film falls is a little bit in the direction, as I mentioned, the comedic timing, but also in the screenplay. And this story is by Emma Thompson, but as you mentioned at the top, she did co-write it. I really like Emma Thompson. I have been an Emma Thompson fan since 1988 when PBS broadcast this BBC sketch show she did called Thompson. And it was what she is. It was witty, it was ferociously intelligent, it was charming as hell. 7 years later, after that, she writes the screenplay for Sense and Sensibility, and she wins the Oscar. It is the only Oscar that film wins. And since then, in terms of writing, it's been a bunch of Nanny McPhee scripts and Bridget Jones' Baby and a film called Effie Gray, which kind of vanished off the face of the earth in 2014. So I realized, I had this little sad revelation that for me, it's the actor and persona of Emma Thompson, not the writer, that I really respond to.
Well, I kind of had a theory watching this that Emma Thompson had the idea for this twist, kind of scrawled it on the back of a cocktail napkin, gets a story credit. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
She co-wrote the screenplay also.
Yeah, she's more involved in that. And she's involved in also some of the most questionable tone things that the movie does. So I think that it's admirable that the movie decides to engage sincerely with, like, the emotional impact of being an immigrant in London during Brexit. And I think it's also great that it takes time to incorporate one of George Michael's core personal issues, which is helping homelessness in London. However, how it chooses to do those things and the tone in which it approaches them is really, like, kind of queasy. It's great that we want to engage sincerely with what it's like to be a Yugoslavian immigrant. Can we do that in the same movie where, like, Emma Thompson is doing a Boris and Natasha level Yugoslavian immigrant impersonation? But it makes me a little uncomfortable. I like that they're not saying, because this is light entertainment, it can't deal with any darkness. But I do wish they'd been a little bit more thoughtful about how the darkness was incorporated and had done it in a way that I think accorded more respect to the people directly dealing with those issues rather than making it sort of like sad accessories in a cute white woman's life.
Well, I liked it, and a lot of people have not liked it, and some people in this room do not like it, but I will be curious to hear if you like it. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Margaret Willison at Mrs. Friday Next. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all right back here on Friday.
I'm Peter Sagal. Sure, you're enjoying this NPR podcast filled with important and useful information, but is it the most important and useful information? Like this.
The museum actually went and made a synthetic version of dinosaur breath.
It's Axe body spray, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. Listen now and share with your friends.